to the fifth case, the United States versus Flores. Ms. Kelly.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. My name is Anise Kelly, and I represent Appellant Roberto Flores. As an aside, I would just like to make a comment that the trial counsel in this matter, Gerardo Gutierrez, was the prior Mr. Gerardo Gutierrez, who failed to appear for the oral argument.
Well, what does that have to do with this case?
I just want to point it out as an aside, Your Honor.
Well,
the basis of
you pointed it out. I don't know what it speaks.
The basis of this appeal is ineffective assistance of counsel.
Well, we'll focus on that, Ms. Kelly, and not the attendance of counsel in another case.
And this alludes to a question that Judge Easterbrook asked in the prior case.
I was going to get to the direct appeal question.
Right.
Yes, let me address Judge Easterbrook's concern about that. And I believe it's pretty well established law in the Seventh Circuit that if there is a record established, then direct appeal is proper. The only reason one would need...
And your client's comfortable with the idea that this is the best record he could ever put together on an ineffective assistance claim.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe so.
Has there been a hearing at which the trial counsel testified why he adopted the strategy he did?
No, Your Honor, there hasn't.
Without such a hearing, I don't see how an ineffective assistance claim can possibly proceed. The Supreme Court has said that the tactical decisions of counsel have to be respected unless you show that it's, you know, complete fluff. And without a hearing, I don't see how the judge could inquire into the tactical choices of counsel.
Your Honor, I think this record is replete with a number of deficiencies.
You can say that, but as I said before, the record for defendants making ineffective assistance claims on direct appeal in the Seventh Circuit is zero for 122 years. And the reason for that number is that without an evidentiary hearing, claims like this cannot succeed. The only way an evidentiary hearing is going to be held is on a 2255 motion. I'm quite serious. Does your client know that this is an appeal he can lose but not win?
I don't know that I would characterize it that way. He has been informed it's an uphill battle, but with all due respect...
It's not simply an uphill battle. It would be an uphill battle if this were a 2255 motion.
With all due respect,
it is doomed. This appeal is doomed. And your client will lose the ability to file a 2255 action on this theory. Now, if that's your client's choice, we will proceed. But I have a hard time understanding why a rational person would make that choice.
With all due respect, Your Honor, one of the main cases cited in this matter is United States v. Holman, which this court heard on direct appeal and said was proper for direct appeal. It didn't find prejudice, but it did find ineffective assistance.
It is proper in the sense that, yes, we can affirm. We have jurisdiction. We've decided quite a lot of ineffective assistance cases on direct appeal. And the defendants have lost every single one of them.
And I think the reason is prejudice, Your Honor. And I would like to focus my argument on...
We don't even get to prejudice unless we discover that there has been deficient performance. We can't get to deficient performance without knowing why trial counsel did what he did. And we can't do that without a hearing. And we don't have a hearing.
Look, you
are entitled... Your client is entitled to proceed. I'm doing my best to protect him, but if he does not wish to be protected, we'll entertain this appeal. But I don't think there's the smallest chance that it will be the first in 122 years to succeed.
Um, If Your Honor wishes, I will go through trial counsel's deficiencies that are well established on the record. One of the most glaring deficiencies was when trial counsel stated to the jury in his closing argument that his client, Mr. Flores, should have been was actually guilty of more crimes, but the government, for whatever reason, chose not to charge him with those crimes. I would argue that that statement, had the government made that statement, would have been grounds for mistrial, prosecutorial misconduct.
Well, he was facing overwhelming evidence. This is as cold a case as I've ever seen. And he's essentially conceding the lesser charges.
No, Your Honor. That statement was that he was guilty of more crimes that the government did not charge him with.
It's hyperbolic, but it seems strategic to me. On this record, it seems strategic to me.
It
wasn't a winning strategy, but it was a strategy.
I can't imagine a strategy in which a defense counsel says, my client was guilty of more crimes, but he wasn't charged with them.
Well, it's a trust in the jury that the jury is not going to convict him of anything he's not charged with, and he's going to focus on the more serious charges that he can contest in some way.
Well, I would argue, again, that had the government made that comment, it would have been grounds for a mistrial or prosecutorial misconduct. But because it was made by defense counsel, I would argue Mr. Flores isn't protected by that. And I would argue it's even more credible, that sort of a statement, coming from defense counsel as opposed to the government, because this is the man who is supposed to be the advocate telling the jury he's guilty of even more crimes. And I would take issue.
You've never heard a defense lawyer say, my client's a horrible person, he's done some really bad things, but he didn't do what he's charged with. You've never heard that argument?
Yes, I don't think that is this argument. I think this argument is, here is a guilty man, but he's even more guilty than you know. And again, I don't think it was a coherent strategy. I think it was poor lawyering. And combined with trial counsel's statement that he was only pretending to challenge the government's case, that is a damning admission. So even though it may have appeared that he was putting on a defense and cross-examining everybody, he then told the jury he wasn't. And he left it to the jury to ferret out what parts of the defense were real and what parts were fake. And I would argue that would be an impossible challenge for a seasoned trial lawyer at that stage of the game to go back and say which parts were real and which parts were fake. And that is not what the Sixth Amendment guarantees. The Sixth Amendment guarantees effective assistance, and I'm well aware that the hurdle is prejudice. And I would argue that Mr. Flores, if the court does not presume prejudice under U.S. v. Chronic, I certainly would argue that he was actually prejudiced when the totality and the cumulative effect of all trial counsel's deficiencies is brought to bear, and that's what the jury saw. And certainly that comment, he's guilty of more crimes, and I didn't challenge the evidence, combined with his multiple admissions of guilt, 8 different times, I would argue Mr. Flores was actually prejudiced. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Ms. Greenwald. I shouldn't have to look at the card for you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Helene Greenwald on behalf of the United States. As this Court is well aware, the standard for prejudice under Strickland is not is looking at the evidence in the case. And in this case, the evidence, as Your Honors have noted, was overwhelming as to his guilt on all the counts charged. So just on the basis of prejudice alone, the government, the conviction should be affirmed and the ineffective assistance claim denied. But I also just want to set the record straight on a couple of points that counsel made in terms of the ineffectiveness claim, in terms of counsel's performance. This wasn't a her context, her comment is really out of context in saying that Mr. Gutierrez argued that he was guilty of even more crimes. It was in the context of a defense of saying, yes, we are not contesting that he sold drugs. He sold small quantities of drugs. However, he did not, and he vigorously opposed that it was done in exchange for firearms, which are the counts that carried the mandatory minimums and the much more excessive penalties. And in terms of arguing he's guilty of even more crimes, it was in the context of that. It was saying, okay, the government even showed you an additional instance when he sold drugs. I don't know why they didn't charge him with that one, but yes, we're not contesting that. So really, was it saying, yes, he's guilty of the kitchen sink here and crimes that weren't even charged? And he also, again, the context of the comment, I'm not challenging the government's case as to that, as to my cross-examination questions. Again, that was specifically, I'm not challenging the government's case as to his involvement in the sales of small quantities of drugs. Mr. Gutierrez was very clear. I am challenging the government's case in the context of drug sales for firearms and the firearm possession charges. And Mr. Gutierrez was very clear in his arguments to the jury that he was making these concessions so that the jury could understand they could trust him, that he wasn't trying to pull something past them. So unless the court has any questions, the government would rest on our briefs and on the record and ask you to affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Greenwald. Ms. Kelly? All right. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.